Welcome to PMA Takes on Tech, the podcast that explores the problems, solutions, people, and ideas that are shaping the future of the produce industry. I'm your host, Bonnie Estes, the Vice President of Technology at the Produce Marketing Association, and I've spent years in the ag tech sector, so I can attest it's hard to navigate this ever-changing world. Thanks for joining us and allowing us to serve as your guide to the new world of produce and technology. On my podcast, I typically look at a problem for the produce industry and then talk to one or two companies with technology-based solutions to that problem. Today with my guests, we're going to look at some problems and solutions of the food system itself, moving away from an industrialized monoculture system built to provide calories and yield towards one based on healthy people and sustainable, equitable ecosystems. In the produce industry, we are all about nutrient-dense, fresh food for healthy people and a healthy planet. I have with me Shezeray Assad, the CEO of Food System 6. Food System 6 is a nonprofit accelerator with a mission to support impact-driven entrepreneurs as they transform how we grow, produce, and distribute food. That's a really big mission. Many listeners may not be familiar with the concept with the 6 food system. Welcome, and can you explain that?
Yes. Well, thank you, Bonnie, for letting me just dig right in. So at Food System 6, we are obviously thinking about systems. And as such, you know, our name, as it indicates, we've really been looking at, you know, the systems over the last 6 systems. And we sort of look at that through the context of, you know, the first system really was hunters and gatherers that led to sort of early domestication. We sort of call that the discovery of beer. And then hybridization and trait selection really earmarked the third food system. The fourth was sort of what we look at as the Green Revolution. That's where we started seeing a lot of, you know, synthetic chemicals, high yield varietals. And then the emergence of the fifth food system started happening sort of around the 70s, response to globalization. This is where we saw a lot of the lengthier supply chains being built, standardization, larger scale production and distribution, sort of a system, as you said at the beginning, optimized for yield, calories, not necessarily for sustainability, which leads us to the 6th food system, the one that Food System 6 is focused on building, one that shifts us towards a system that can sustain itself, one that looks at the planet, the people that depend on it, and thinks about and enables solutions that prioritize resilience, regeneration, and health. So our work is really about sort of holding the complexity around this vision and supporting innovators, entrepreneurs who are building, businesses that are sort of achieving outcomes focused on resilience, sustainability, and health.
And how do you define impact, and how do you use that to pick the companies that you work with and invest in?
We're focused on innovations that are building vibrant farms. So resilience, richness, life-filled land. We're looking for solutions that support healthy people. You've talked a lot about labor already. So I think we can all appreciate the importance of, you know, taking good care of the people who are really stewarding and backboning the work that's happening out in the fields. And also, you know, looking for companies that are creating, you know, healthy foods, healthy lands for our communities. Sustainable ecosystems is our third pillar. This is working within the bounds of our ecological living systems, ensuring production and consumption cycles of our land are loops rather than lines. We also look at justice and fairness. I would say, you know, really this is, I think, the heart of what's most important, and especially now. And I know that your audience is global and can really appreciate the need to look at the systemic inequalities of our food system to address dismantling the injustices, looking for ways to uphold dignity and quality of life for food workers, healing social, historical, cultural connections with the food, people, and the land. there are so many innovators that are building solutions that are addressing sort of all of these areas. And then, you know, we've added a fifth element to what we look for, which is circularity. And we've been able to do this in partnership with Huhtamäki, which is a global packaging company. They're sponsoring us to select a cohort focused on these, you know, these closed loop models of circular production, enabling us to really go further into seeking regeneration production models and connecting that to all of the different parts of both a small to mid-scale resilient system and the much larger corporate companies, and looking at ways that they can really be involved. So those five pillars: circularity, justice and fairness, sustainable ecosystems, vibrant farms, and healthy people are really provide us with a holistic lens to look at how companies are making a difference.
That's really fascinating. I mean, I've worked with a lot of venture capitalists and been on a lot of selection committees of companies, and nobody looks at it that way. And it certainly adds a challenge to both the people that are coming to talk to you, and also as people who are trying to pick what companies do I invest in. Because on top of that as well, you have to think they have a good business model and they have to be able to make money for their investors at some point. So those are a lot of hoops to jump through. And I love that you're doing that. And it's really forcing people to look at how what they're doing has an impact on the whole system, and not just one piece and maybe making money and then going. So it's really exciting to see the work that you're doing. So what are the ways that you are engaging with the companies? You mentioned the circular economy cohort. What other cohorts do you have, and how does that whole process work?
Yes, and thank you very much for just pointing out the bit of the elephant in the room. And you know, a lot of our work is about blended capital. A lot of our work is about building this pre-competitive environment to help educate investors about what's happening in the food system so that we can look at what are the other instruments. That's a big part of what our program does. So our sort of formal work is that we run a two-year cohort-based accelerator program. We're currently in the midst of cohort five. So folks can go to our website, see who those six companies are. The work itself for this cohort is founder-focused. It's largely bespoke. And, you know, we're sort of designing what we do to meet CEOs at their individual milestones. Our work is done in a way that we don't charge any companies who participate with us. We've just with this fifth cohort started to charge 1.5% equity for for-profit companies. So it's, you know, a much more of just an advisory stake. And we tend to work with these companies for much longer than the 2 years. That's actually been one of the things we've iterated over the years. We used to be a 16-week model, much more of a traditional sort of accelerator. What we learned with food and ag companies who are building with a focus on impact is that they need a lot more time. They need a lot more resources. They need a lot more support removing barriers. And so that's really what the program focuses on. Looking at ways in which we can build unique relationships, we can build partnerships, we can create an environment that's, you know, community-minded, that creates a space for a lot of different types of people to engage without this expectation of necessarily an investment or something happening except for the opportunity to build relationship, lend expertise. And that's really the ultimate way in which we continue building out our work. How do we create relationships that remove barriers? How do we create access to capital, intellectual capital, social capital, financial being, you know, what we see as actually one of the things our entrepreneurs need? I wouldn't say they need the least of, but it's not just the money. They need people who have real experience and wisdom and a real willingness to create a more resilient business that can help to bolster this beautiful food system that we have.
And do the cohorts work together within the cohorts? Is that, did they spend time together? I mean, it has to be virtual now, but normally do people get together and learn from each other? Is that part of the value?
Yes. And thank you for asking. You know, part of our selection criteria is that we're really looking at, the impact pillars. How are companies working across these areas of impact we talked about? We're looking at the business viability. Most of the entrepreneurs we work with have already been in business. Some of them have been in business for 10 years. And it's because they're building these long-term, very resilient supply chains, which we've seen stand up. We're looking for folks who actually want support and help. So they have a certain coachability and that are really committed to being part of a community. So that is really an essential ingredient, I would say, is that yes, we very much build a systems thinking cohort of entrepreneurs who want to help one another and who want to help other entrepreneurs. It's really a core ethos of our work. And, you know, we find that, and I think as folks talk to other entrepreneurs, you know, this is really lonely. So we're looking for people who are committed to building businesses that can really withstand withstand the pressures of this environment. You have to be willing to collaborate and work with other people in order to make that happen.
Yeah, and I think doing something as laudable and huge as changing the food system, there's so many moving parts and different parts of the supply chain, and what you step in and do affects what happens in the rest of the chain, especially when you're trying to make a change. So it's really exciting that people are able to have a resource and depend on each other. That's really amazing. So through this, you've introduced me to two companies that you are working with that I'm going to interview next, Farming and Farm Generations Cooperative. Can you tell me briefly what interested you about these two companies and why you're involved with them?
Yes, I will try to keep it brief because there's so much within each of these, which is the case with every entrepreneur we work with. They're just like fascinating humans. But so at FS6, we have an initiative focused on scaling open source technology solutions for farmers to decrease the reliance on commodity production models and increase productivity and efficacy of small to mid-size regional food systems. So in partnership with, we'll talk about one, but expert scientists, roboticists, engineers, farmers, this program is really working to decentralize and broaden access to technology, to build tools that can support small to mid-scale production needs, and bolster the resiliency of regional food production communities. So you're going to talk with Lindsay at Grown By and Ethan with Farming. Both these entrepreneurs are farmers that are building technology solutions that are farmer focused and are designed to meet farmers where they are. They are both experienced entrepreneurs, and you touched on it earlier, but they recognize that traditionally funded VC tech is often just extractive for small to mid-scale farmers. There's just a business model incompatibility. So they're really trying to leverage new entity types within this pre-competitive environment that we have at FS6 to seek blended capital that's non-dilutive and to seek other support. That's a long rambling background to introduce Farm Generations Co-op. It's a farmer-owned cooperative and it's a software solution. So I'm very interested in just generally alternative ownership models. Cooperatives are uniquely stable entities. In the last few years, there are around 134 agricultural cooperatives that have been in business for over 100 years. So the idea of taking and applying this model to a software solution that's farmer built and farmer owns means that profits made on the software will go back to farmers. That's a very uniquely differentiated model. And similarly, Ethan Rubley, who's running Farming, this is a farm robotics company. Ethan is also the entrepreneur in residence for Food System 6, leading this open tech initiative that I described in my earlier ramble. And he initially approached us just seeking connections to buyers for his small farm. But we quickly aligned on values and vision, and really together talked about the need for a food tech revolution that's inclusive of farmers, that's open source, that's supported in this pre-competitive environment so that we can learn together, we can share insights and help other farmer producer innovators with their solution. So really what we're looking at is trying to build a multi-size farm tech revolution that is fragmented so that it can meet localized solutions and help bring more value back to farmers who are looking to be more participatory in the small to mid-scale production landscape.
That's so exciting because I see a lot in the produce industry where, you know, they are smaller farms for the most part, and a lot less attention and a lot less technology gets turned towards specialty crops than towards the big broad acre crops. And I worked for a while in the big broad acre crops as well. And I know almost every startup, the investors will say, no, you have to make something for corn. You know, stop looking at strawberries or fruits or anything like that. You have to, if your product doesn't work in corn, you know, we don't want to talk to you. And so a lot of innovation gets turned a different direction because of just the size and scale of the broad acre crops. And so I really love what you're doing that really looks at smaller farms, which will be more specialty type of farms. And also within those farms in around the area of robotics, a lot of people won't try to come up with solutions because it costs a huge amount of money to develop like a strawberry harvester, and strawberry growers aren't going to be able to buy it. And so what are the particular models that you can use where people can work on these things together and develop something that everyone can use that really benefits across the industry? And I think the models that we've been using before that may apply to corn and, you know, that's a whole nother conversation, whether we should be putting our money there or not. But I think, you know, it's really exciting to see with the lenses that you're using to look at smaller farmers and farmers of crops that are more nutrient dense and can be grown more sustainably. It's just great to see your work there. So anything else you want us to know? I think you have a slightly different audience here than you might be used to talking to. So I'd love if you have parting thoughts or any last words or call to action.
Sure. Thank you. And that was such a great summary, you know, and I think just other folks have echoed this, but opportunities to continue seeking collaborations, removing barriers. We're really seeing the need to decentralize and broaden access to technology and tools that can support small to mid-scale production needs and to bolster the resilience of regional food communities and economies. And this is the time to embrace sustainability and justice as a core value proposition for any business, especially in food and farming. You know, we need to collaborate to increase market competitiveness, and we need to create access for small to mid-sized farmers that have been left out of the ag tech revolution. And we need to continue innovating so that we can expedite this transition to a food system that prioritizes sustainability, health, and justice. And that is really, truly a win-win proposition for everyone. And anybody that needs help orienting around that, we say it all the time, we're slammed and we're happy to keep going. So reach out if you want to talk and think about ways you know, to really just think differently about what's next for you, for your business, how you can innovate. Technology doesn't have to be extractive and innovation doesn't have to be expensive. And the time to really just start thinking about doing better together is right now.
Now we'll move into two conversations with companies that are involved with Food System 6. The first is Ethan Rubley of Farming, or if you're cool enough to get the joke, FarmNG. And then we'll move into a conversation with Lindsay Lesher-Shute from Farm Generations Cooperative. Your background is not one I usually run across in the ag industry. Among other things, you've started a company that you sold to Google and then started another company that was based on computer vision and machine learning. And now you're doing a company called Pharming. I'm so excited to dig into what you are up to and what you're thinking about. So how did you decide to move into applying your skills to agriculture?
Well, I've been working as an engineer and entrepreneur in Silicon Valley for the past decade. And last year, I was started looking for an application area where I could apply myself basically to what I feel is the kind of existential threat that we all have to work towards solving, which is climate change and the crises, the impact of that. And so I came across this amazing paper on my archive feed, which was titled Tackling Climate Change with Machine Learning. This is by David Rolnick. And it's basically this call to action to join like a global effort against climate change as a machine learning practitioner. And so it got me kind of thinking, and it's a long paper, but there's a section in there in terms of kind of application areas. And it's really geared towards engineers or scientists or investors or entrepreneurs, right, looking for opportunities to help. And there was one on farms and forestry, and then a subsection called precision agriculture. And, it was robots and computer vision and machine learning. I was like, oh, this is so cool. And but prior to getting into engineering, I grew up in rural Bucks County, Pennsylvania, on my grandmother's 20-acre horse farm, mucking horse stalls. And after high school, I thought I wanted to be, a starving artist and poor farmer. So, I worked a few seasons on some small organic CSA family farms. And it just seemed like a really amazing kind of area to start digging into. And of course I was naive, and still am, but started looking at the problems that farmers were facing and talking to former colleagues from Willow Garage who were picking apples with robots and talking to sustainable agriculture kind of advocates. And, it kind of became clear to me how important our food system really is. I mean, we all have to eat, and ensuring that it's resilient, it's both, because of climate change, but, also from a social justice and health perspective, it just started to really resonate with me. So I basically November 2019 moved from our home in Mountain View to a little 11-acre ag parcel here in Watsonville with my wife and two kids, and kind of ripped them out of the city life. And So we're starting a market farm and selling produce for the local farmers on an online store and working on testing robots in our backyard. So.
Wow. Just like everyone would do that.
Yeah. Why not?
Well, it's so cool, your story, because, what is really needed in agriculture and food production is people with these different skill sets. So we still need, people that go to school and get degrees in agronomy. That's still really important. But we also need people with different skill sets to bring farming and production into the new age with some new tools. And so it's great to see that this was attractive to you. We'll have to get that paper and send it around to more people. So can you tell us a little bit about one of the companies you're working on called Pharming, and what are you wanting to provide for farmers, and how are you doing it?
Yeah, so with Pharming, we're a technology company, still fledgling, but our mission is to scale a sustainable food system through appropriate automation. And so that's a lot to unpack there, but basically we're interested in enabling the small to mid-scale farmer, and specifically looking at market vegetable farming, looking to make those operations more cost effective with robotic tools and technology. And so, you know, right now we're very much in, you know, that early prototyping, searching for the business model, you know, phase of the company. But we have four people working on this, and because of the pandemic and the time we started this, it's like a completely distributed team. So we have, you know, I've got a partner, Matthew Bitterman, who's out in New Hampshire, out of Alphabet's, X, their agriculture project. Michael McGowan is up in Oregon. He's the founder of Carts and Tools, and they build this little electric rototiller. We have an intern, Simka Bradsky. She's an ME student out of Waterloo University in Canada. And so what we're all working on is basically developing a low cost, open source, smart electric micro tractor. That would be basically like a general purpose beast of burden, artificial beast of burden, for a vegetable farm.
Would this be something that a smaller producer would purchase, or would you have the business model of having a fleet and kind of do the Uber of tractor model, or how are you thinking about business model?
That's a good question. I mean, it's still too early to understand what a business model is around, a small robot essentially that you could use on your farm. But I mean, just to give a sense of how we're building this, we're on our second iteration. We have three built of that second iteration, and it costs us about $6,000 in off-the-shelf parts. And so we're publishing all of the software and hardware designs on GitHub. And so the intent is really to find, a repeatable, easy to manufacture platform that you can do research on how to effectively use this on the farm, or, you know, an industrious farmer could take and build or maybe buy one from us and experiment with using it to save labor on the farm. But, you know, it's such an early project, and so can't promise too much, but we'll keep you posted on all of our success and failure if you follow us on our GitHub project.
Great. So what level of adoption do you think we'll have with robotics outside of the broadacre crops, like in the next 5 years? So besides corn and soy, as we start looking at some of the crops that are grown around you in Watsonville, how do you think robotics are going to come to those farms?
Yeah, I think I think RTK guided tractors, I mean, that's already, you know, being adopted, but, you know, looking at essentially the low cost of implementing those systems and strapping them onto existing older tractors for the small, you know, like your small Kubota, or your old used John Deere. I think that's certainly coming, and there's a lot of exciting work going on. Several companies are implementing that, and I think that'll become really practical. I think transportation and logistics on the farm, basically carrying items in and out of the field with AGVs, to me, that, and talking to farmers, that seems like a very practical way to essentially scale your labor force, augment them with something that actually might be able to get to market in the next 5 years. I see smart implements that can leverage computer vision, that can bolt onto any tractor and do transplanting or weed cultivation, those types, or aid in those types of operations, as pretty promising in the next 5 years. And I guess like these market farms that we're working with here in Watsonville, they frequently also have 50% of the labor happens in their pack sheds, right? When they are packing these CSAs that they're delivering, you know, basically door to door, and, you know, might have 400 subscribers. So it's actually like a pretty interesting logistics automation problem at each farm. So I think pack shed automation is another, low cost, affordable pack shed automation. Work cells is another area where you'll see some adoption. So and personally, I feel like harvesting will be limited, like automated harvesting will be limited to those high value specialty crops where it's, you have a certain scale, like apples, that it makes sense. Mm-hmm. But I think in the near term, helping workers, in a generic sense, harvest some product into a bin and place it on a robot and have that robot take it, basically take it to the pack shed, that can save an extraordinary amount of time.
Yeah. And I think as we're more and more nervous about not having enough workers and then keeping the workers that we have safe and healthy, these types of developments will really help. What do you think the barriers to development and adoption are for these types of technologies for smaller acre farms, and how do you think the best way to address them is?
Yeah, I think some of the challenges that we're dealing with really stem around identifying the return on investment for the farmer and what applications to go after, and balancing that with what's practical to build with existing technology. Also in robotics, there's this issue of, human safety and then system reliability. And those are intertwined, but also have an effect on return on investment, right? If you basically need to constantly monitor the system with a person close by, that's not as practical. If it just doesn't make the person actually more efficient. So, and safety, there's not a lot of, precedent and, for safety. And so a lot of companies are concerned about liability, and waiting for legislation to become, more concrete in the United States, especially, before deploying, a robot, at any type of scale. So, and then I think the third issue for smaller farmers is really kind of access to capital. And this has two legs to it, I think. So there's smaller farms, right? And they might lack essentially access to capital. And there might not be loans or, lending facilities available for newer, more novel robotic systems. So then, it's the onus is on the companies to figure out that are developing these systems to figure out how to support kind of that lack of access to capital from the farmer side and institutional side. And then investment in companies that are focused on smaller farms. If you look at, the venture capital model, where you're really looking for something that can scale, relatively quickly, the smaller farms, it's the long tail. There's 95% of the farmers in the US could be considered, small to mid-scale farms. But if you focus on the top 5% of producers, that accounts for 40% of the kind of agricultural value in the US. So a lot of the investment is going into that kind of the larger commercial operations. And so I think that there's part of the work that we're doing at Food System 6 is to identify essentially, capital and business model access for development companies, for investing in development that's going after these smaller operations.
Yeah, that kind of leads into my final question, which you've started to answer there, is how does the work that you're doing align with Food System 6 in working towards a better food system?
Yeah, so what resonates with me with Food System 6 is they're really trying to enable these local food sheds and making those as resilient and self-sufficient as possible. And one of our theses around the technology and the reason why we want it to be appropriate for these smaller scale farm businesses is really to develop something that's financially accessible to the small farm budget, and is adoptable in a wide variety of farm systems, that it's repairable by the user. There's, you know, if you buy $1 million piece of equipment and you're not allowed to fix it, this is, you know, something that just isn't going to work for, you know, the 5-acre farm where you have essentially, you know, the polymath farmer that's playing the piano and rebuilding all of their tractors.
Yeah.
You know, I think what we're looking to do is really, you know, build technology that is in alignment, where the business model and the technology and, you know, how it is proprietary and the competitive moats are well aligned with essentially, you know, that, you know, the values, and principles behind essentially like a sustainable food system. And so, you know, it's still a work in progress. It's like if the kind of the thesis is if we can make those small to mid-scale farmers economically competitive with automation, if they can be as effective at growing produce as a, you know, a larger operation, all of a sudden you bring them out of the red, right? You like the majority of those small and mid-scale farmers are actually at operational risk. And so, you know, if we can make them profitable, you know, there could be like a $1 trillion yield gap in the US alone, right? So anyways, that's long-term what we're working on. And I think Food System 6 has been incredibly supportive of our effort. And we're looking at farming as a prototype for, you know, a sustainable ag tech company.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Thank you so much. And that's, you know, one of the things that I've seen in my role is that an awful lot of the risk of developing and adopting technology ends up on the farmer, which is not the place it should be. Mm-hmm. And so I think working with people like you and the systems that you're developing is a whole, you know, kind of turns that on its head. And we're going to see a lot more adoption and a better food system because of that. With me, Lindsay Letcher-Shute. As I was reading up on your background, there are so many things that you're involved in. I was having trouble deciding what to talk to you about. You ran the National Young Farmers Coalition for over 11 years. You hosted the Young Farmers podcast, which has really great conversations with important voices. I've really enjoyed listening to some of those. But for this discussion, let's talk about your current venture, Farm Generations. So what does Farm Generations do and why did you start it?
Thank you for having me on, Vani. Yes, so Farm Generations is an outgrowth of the National Young Farmers Coalition. It's a national agricultural cooperative that was incubated by Young Farmers Coalition, and we are delivering fair technology to the farmer community. And our first project is an app called Grown By that will be available this fall more broadly, and it makes it very easy for farmers to market and sell their products through subscription and online orders to consumers.
So what size of markets and what type of people will be involved in the app?
This app is really focused on direct to consumer operations. So that's where we found real need for technology. My husband and I have a fairly scaled direct to consumer vegetable farm in the Hudson Valley, and through my own experience, seeing him try to manage that farm and our crew of 17 people, and we have over 1,000 CSA members this year, it is very complex. And so the idea is Grown By will help to manage some of that complexity, those relationships with customers, and hopefully save our farm and many other farms lots of time in employee hours and in trying to get those orders right and really provide a service to customers that they enjoy, so they'll keep coming back. But it's really focused on direct to consumer farms, really from the smallest beginning operations to more scaled operations like ours.
And do you think there's going to be an increase in that demand because of COVID, or are you seeing more people trying to do that now?
We have seen that on our farm. We had an incredible increase in sales in the spring. Some of that has shifted a little bit as there's been more availability at grocery stores and just some of the normalcy of markets have sort of crept back in. Things are more as they were, but we still have much stronger demand than we ever have in our 17 years of operating this farm. So there's the trend of people wanting to buy online, and there's the trend of people looking to buy food locally from regional producers where they want to support that producer because they're essential to their community. And I think consumers really understand how important direct-to-consumer farms are now in terms of regional food security in new ways. But I think there's also a real relief in for consumers in knowing exactly where their produce comes from. They know who grew it. They know how it's being handled all the way to their refrigerator.
Yeah, we're definitely just through a lot of the consumer research that we see at PMA, we're seeing those trends and it's interesting to hear you see how they're playing out there.
Yep.
Yeah. So I met you through Food System 6, and how does what you're doing align with their values?
Well, Food System 6 has a truly holistic and such a thoughtful approach to looking at the food system and supporting the food system from the producer to the consumer to the ecosystem at large, and how an individual farm and farm system impacts that. So what we're doing at Farm Generations is thinking deeply about how can we serve the world through improved technology, but we're going beyond that because we're also thinking about fairness and how the cooperative model uniquely offers farmers equity in the future of the food system. And that's something that not everyone just understands right away, but Food System 6 is a group of people who have been thinking about these problems for a long time and are willing to really engage deeply in the complexity and the challenges faced by the food system. So I think certainly from a values point of view, we're highly aligned in the outcomes we're looking for. We're looking for good food, regional food, and good environmental and social outcomes. But also the people at Food System 6, I think, are very thoughtful and willing to embrace the complexity and what it's going to take to get there.
Yeah, I got to talk to Cheseret, and I'm amazed at how they're thinking about it and how they're looking with this huge vision of really changing the food system and how we work. So I'm very excited about all of the companies and the cohorts. So I love the various issues that you're focusing on through the podcast that you had and the work that you've done with young farmers. And in this time with a desire to eat for health and immunity and our disrupted supply chain and also financial inequity, what are some of the changes and movements that give you hope going forward?
This is such an interesting time. I'm certainly hopeful in what I'm seeing in shifts in consumers' interest and understanding in agriculture, just around local food and agriculture and regional food systems. I have, as a grower, I've always known that I am essential, right? I was like, what we're doing is critical. We are growing food that most people are not involved in that business, right? It's like 1% of the population is growing food for everyone else. I'm also very excited to see what's happening around race in the United States, happening in parallel with the COVID-19 crisis. This conversation around race and inequity is carrying over into the food system and is encouraging many more young people to take action in communities, thinking about nutrition, how we can improve the lives of people who do not have access to food, but also how we can encourage Black, Indigenous, people of color to become farmers in the United States and reclaim some of that history and give people new opportunity in that space. So there's just been all these projects that have come up around providing new opportunities for land access for farmers of color in all parts of the U.S., just like this new burst of enthusiasm. And there's been financial support for training and many of these sort of more structural initiatives. So I'm hopeful that on the other side of this, we're going to have a food system that's much more resilient and a food system that is much, much more diverse and, you know, ready to serve what is ever, you know, going to come at us next. I think hopefully after this, the nation will be more well prepared.
That's great. I love hearing that. There's a growing awareness that the food system is not merely the sum of its parts, but that all parts of the system relate to and affect one another in a complex and sometimes indirect ways. This was such a great opportunity to talk to people who are thoughtfully involved in moving our food system towards an integrated approach where decisions are made within the context of environmental, physical, and social health. We're in a time of massive upheaval where fundamental shifts are calling for technology, innovation, and entrepreneurship. No matter where we sit in the food chain, we can respond to these shifts with ingenuity and creativity to shape the food system in a positive way. What can you do today? That's it for this episode of PMA Takes on Tech. Thanks for allowing us to serve as your guide to the new world of produce and technology. Be sure to check out all of our episodes at pma.com and wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe, and I would love to get any comments or suggestions on what you might want me to take on. For now, stay safe and eat your fruits and vegetables, and we'll see you next time.